You wanna give love to the city, that's a fact. But you're gonna need help if you wanna make an impact.
Well endowed,
you want to be
well endowed
with the Edmonton community.
Things really happen when you find that you're well endowed.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Well Endowed Podcast, brought to you by Edmonton Community Foundation. We bring you community discourse about the amazing organizations and the people who come together to help make Edmonton strong. I'm Elizabeth Bonkink.
And I'm Andrew Paul. On this month's episode, Maria Allman tells us how the Don and Noreen Lowry Awards for Women of Excellence helped her pursue her Bachelor of Business Administration at NAIT. We'll hear about some impressive youth initiatives made possible by ECF's Young Edmonton Grants Program. But first, Paula Simons challenges accepted narratives about Alberta's history in her contribution to High Level Lit. High Level Lit is a Canada 150 project that is bringing 12 writers together to discuss Canada's sesquicentennial through an Edmonton lens.
That's right, Andrew. Paula Simons is an award-winning columnist for the Edmonton Journal. I was so excited to sit down with Paula because, let's face it, I'm a huge fan. We had a great conversation about Alberta's history and how we think about that history. Let's take a listen. So thank you for being with us. And we're going to talk a little bit about High Level Lit, which is our sesquicentennial project for the Edmonton Community Foundation. Paula is one of the 12 notable writers that are connected to Edmonton in some way. I won't say from Edmonton because some of the authors are not from Edmonton. But connected to. Along with Paula, all the authors will be published in an anthology that will be published by 18 Bridges, and they will all participate in a salon series. So, first of all, welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I'm so excited because I've wanted to be inside of this building for my whole life. So, yes, podcast listeners should know that I insisted on being taken on a cook's tour of the original McDougall house before we popped into the studio here. So I'm very excited to be here.
Some of the listeners may not know that we are in a very old home downtown Edmonton that was not a heritage home, but certainly has a lot of history.
Well, I mean, you know, it is an important heritage home. And I, years ago, fought very hard because it was at risk of being torn down. Mm-hmm. And I wrote some impassioned pieces for the Journal, and the Edmonton Community Foundation stepped in to purchase it and repurpose it as its headquarters. So I am doubly thrilled to be here to see such a beautiful piece of our shared heritage being put to such good use.
Now, you are a well-known historian, let's say, in Edmonton, and you have a real passion for buildings. So is this maybe a hint of what you're going to talk about?
Well, it is, because when Curtis Gillespie approached me and asked me to write a piece for this High Level Lit series, I mean, it's interesting because everything this year is a Canada 150 project. And after a while, it becomes a bit rote what people are saying. And I really thought hard about Alberta and Canada's 150. And the narrative, the received national narrative of Confederation, really doesn't have much to do with Alberta. In 1867, we were not part of Canada. And, you know, Alberta didn't join Confederation until 1905. But even, you know, at the time of Confederation, this wasn't Canadian territory. You know, this is just still a time when Alberta was very much in transition. And so I wanted to focus my piece, I guess, first of all, on the complicated relationship we have with First Nations and Métis people. Because as soon as you say Canada 150, you're imposing a narrative from the perspective of colonial settlement, which is not the narrative of the continent. But also to talk about a uniquely Western perspective on Canada. Because I think often we forget that the narrative of Alberta and Saskatchewan is not the narrative of Upper and Lower Canada.
Yeah, it's a very good point. We often have to take a step back and, you know, as we talk 150 and remind people that it's not Canada's 150th birthday, but the 150th anniversary of Confederation.
Which is a very important thing. I had a misspent youth reading lots of science fiction and speculative fiction and alternate histories. And so I sort of wanted to play in my piece with thinking about what an alternate history of this place might have been. And so as the focal point of my column. One of the people I talk about is the Earl of South Esk, who's a bit of an obsession of mine. I became obsessed with the Earl of South Esk a number of years ago when the Royal Alberta Museum repatriated a collection that the South Esk family had been keeping in their castle in Scotland, lo these many years, collected when the Earl was here in 1859. He was the first celebrity tourist to come to what we now call Alberta, the first celebrity tourist to come to the Rocky Mountains. We have to think of him as like Brad Pitt, only with money, more money. He was a member of the Scottish nobility, and he was a wannabe poet who self-published some of the worst poetry ever written about this place. Some of the worst poetry ever written by anyone. And in 1859, he'd had something of a nervous breakdown because his wife had died young and he'd loved her very much. And so he abandoned all his children and came west with a retinue of sort of 75 camp followers who brought with them the complete works of Shakespeare and a India rubber bathtub. And he trekked.
And all things that you need while you're...
That's right. All these things, you know, what's that term they use for fancy camping? Glamping?
Glamping.
He was the original glamper. So he came glamping across from Red River all the way to here and showed up in Fort Edmonton about 1859 and then made it all the way out to what we now call Jasper. And when you read his memoirs and his very bad poetry, you get a real sense of what a vibrant, dynamic culture was blossoming here. This mixture of Cree and Blackfoot and Nakota and Dene and French and English and Scots Gaelic and Welsh, a little German. And his time here sort of was really, he happened to be here at a high point for prairie culture and before the mechanisms of colonialism really dug in. So I wanted to sort of compare and contrast his time here with the sort of received narrative we have of Confederation from a Central Canadian perspective.
So you look at an alternate history of Alberta coming from that point of view, and quite often we're always looking forward to what's next in Canada's 150th. What are some of the predictions that you would have had this alternate history happened?
Well, I imagine what might have happened if we hadn't joined Confederation. What might have happened if there had been a kind of a true Métis culture foundation for this place and that, settlers who came afterwards were absorbed into that instead of
the other way around.
I don't know what that would have looked like. Maybe we would have joined Confederation anyway, but on different terms. I don't know what it would have looked like now, but it just strikes me that we don't often think of it. I think when we grow up here, we have this idea of pioneers who came to an empty land and populated it. And we don't think about the fact that there is a different way things might have worked out and a different path we might have taken and a path that might have led us to a more just and more equitable relationship. I think it's really key to remember that in 1859, when the Earl of South Esk showed up here, I mean, this was not even the British Empire. This was still the sovereign land of the First Nations who were here, and there were this many white people. And white was a very odd, it's not the right term because there had already been generations of intermarriage. So mm-hmm. even the people who were in charge at Fort Edmonton were what we, I think, call Métis. But, they were coded as white. And so it was a different time before there was such a Victorian color bar. So I think we just are used to thinking in one narrative groove. And I wanted to just jostle people a little bit out of that groove.
That's really a great way of reintroducing some of the new things that are happening in terms of our education systems being changed to talk more about the Métis people and more about First Nations people and their experiences, which really wasn't the case up until just recently. Yeah. The curriculum's now being rewritten. Yeah. So,
And we're making small symbolic steps. I mean, just in the last couple of weeks, Mayor Don Iveson has announced that we're going to be flying the Treaty 6 flag and the Métis flag outside of City Hall, not just on special occasions, but all the year round. just this last couple of days from when we're recording, announced that we're building a First Nations art park, you know, in the River Valley, which will have a Cree name. And I thought it was really interesting because when they made the announcement, they didn't announce the name in Roman letters, but in Cree syllabics. And so I think these things are tiny, and if we stop there, it's not enough. I mean, then it is just lip service. But sometimes you have to start with tiny steps. It was like when it suddenly became the vogue that at every public function, we would begin by saying, you know, we're on Treaty 6 land, the traditional land of the, you know, blah, 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 blah. And at first I thought, oh, we're just going to say that? Like, yeah, what difference does that make? And I was very cynical because I'm a journalist, so I am always very cynical. But, you know, the more events I go to and the more often, as because I MC events all the time, that I say the words myself, at first I thought it was virtue signaling, just lip service. But I do think it goes beyond that. I think that eventually it creates a subtle paradigm shift in the way you view those relationships of power.
So we talked a lot today with Paula Simons about...
We talked a lot because I talk a lot.
That's okay. We like people who talk a lot here on our show. So, yeah, we talked a lot today about, you know, all over the map in terms of our history and our culture and where we are today. But you're going to have to read her anthology if you want to hear exactly what she has to say, or come out to one of our salons where she'll be speaking. And we'll have more information on that coming up soon.
Thank you very much. It was delightful to be here.
Thanks for coming.
A very big thanks to Paula Simons for joining us on the Well Endowed podcast. I'm definitely looking forward to catching her essay in the High Level Lit anthology, which will be coming out in October, so mark that in your calendars.
Me too. Paula Simons will be one of our speakers at the August High Level Lit Salon. Keep tuning into the Well Endowed podcast as we'll keep you posted on the details.
Edmonton Community Foundation provides all sorts of grants and awards. We highlight these on our podcast for two reasons. The first is to celebrate what people are creating in Edmonton, and the second is to let you know about funding opportunities that can help get your ideas and projects off the ground.
Our next two stories showcase an award that has been granted out to our community. First up is the Dawn and Noreen Lowry Awards for Women of Excellence. This award is for women of all ages who are studying in one of these programs. Are you ready for this? Water, power, finance, energy, accounting, healthcare, safety, and/or community relations.
Well, that was a mouthful.
Yes, it was. If you're a woman pursuing studies in any of these fields, this award might be right for you. It certainly was for Maria Almond. She sat down with Lisa Pruden to talk about what receiving the Lowry Award for Women of Excellence has done for her.
Well, Maria, thank you so much for joining us on the Well Endowed podcast. Well,
thank you so much for having me as a guest today.
Absolutely. So can you introduce yourself a little bit to our listeners?
Sure. My name is Maria Almond. I am a third-year Bachelor of Business Administration Accounting student at NAIT. I originally came from the Philippines in 2004. So actually, in 3 days, it will be 13 years since I moved to Canada. I came here as a nanny, and that's pretty much all the job I did for the past 12 years, childcare.
And now you've decided to go back and get your degree, your bachelor degree in business administration.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the challenges you faced in making that decision?
It was difficult. First, I could not leave the kids that I was looking after. That was really hard for me because I had that connection and bond with them. So that was really hard to give up. And the second one was I was fearful of going back to school because I was scared that I'll be too old and that I'll be around not kids, but people that are like half my age. So, yeah, that was really difficult.
How did you find it when you were there?
Most of the classes that I took was online, so that wasn't too bad. But last fall, I did went to NAIT for in-class, and that was challenging. It was really hard to like stay focused and not to look around and notice that there are so many young people around me. And yeah, it was an adjustment, but it was a good adjustment. It was good. I really learned a lot from other students and obviously from my instructor, and it was some kind of an experience.
Were there any other challenges that you had to make your way through?
Yes. So when I first moved here in Canada, I already know English, but my English is, we don't use English in the Philippines as conversation. So you know English, but you don't practice it. So moving here, that was kind of an adjustment because I'm not used to talking to people in English. But I think after several years of being here in Canada, that kind of helped. And being around other students, you're kind of more how do you say that? You're practicing more. So that helped me develop my communication skills.
I wanted to ask, actually, you were just finishing your exams for your third year. Is that right?
That's right. That's right.
How are you feeling today?
I have one more exam come in, but it feels good because then another semester has passed and I feel successful in a way. And I'm looking forward to a little bit of a break.
What are you hoping to do with your degree once you've earned it?
My short-term goal is to work at an accounting firm, hopefully get some experience and get a grasp of what the accounting world is really like. And then in maybe a few years, get my designation and become an accountant. And my long-term goal is to have my own accounting firm. I want it to cater to new immigrants, low-income families, and students. It's a way of giving back to the community. Like, you know, a lot of people have helped me get to where I am now. So one day I want to be able to do the same thing.
Is there anything else that you wanted to share about your story?
I want to talk about the impact of the Dawn and Noreen Lowry Women of Excellence Award. I want to make sure that I tell them how I really appreciate it and how it changed my life. One, it tells me that hard work pays off. Second, it tells me that I was chosen. Being chosen tells me that they saw something in me, that I have the potential to succeed, and I want to make sure that I prove them right. And third would be they inspire me to also give back. Like I said, when the time comes that I have the opportunity to do the same, that I want to also help other students reach their dream, achieve their goals, just like how the Women of Excellence Award is helping me achieve mine right now. And I just want the scholarship committee to know that I'm doing really well in school and I hope that I am making them proud. Just to be a representative of what the scholarship committee is looking for, that is a really great honor for me.
Maria, thank you so much again for coming in and joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me.
That was Lisa's conversation with Maria Almond about her experience in receiving the Lowry Award for Women of Excellence. Thanks very much to Maria for sharing her story with us. If you would like to find out more about the award, visit thewellendowedpodcast.com for the link. The deadline to apply is May 31st.
Our next story highlights ECF's Young Edmonton Grants Program, also known as YEG. These grants are awarded three times a year to projects that are initiated, led, and organized by young residents in the Greater Edmonton region. This grant program showcases a variety of young leadership abilities in our community. Lisa, you're hiding quietly away in our studio, but you were actually at the YEG gathering.
I was indeed. The YEG Review Committee invited this year's spring recipients to a special gathering where they could meet each other, learn about other projects, celebrate their successful applications, and, of course, pick up their checks. They were very excited to share their projects with us. But first, I caught up with Amelia Hausch and Emily Philippos. They are part of the YEG Review Committee and took some time to share what they love about it.
So my name is Amelia Hausch. I'm on the Young Edmonton Grants Committee. My favorite part of being on the committee is I get to see all sorts of different things that happen in the community. I particularly like seeing like the different projects that people make, and like honestly these networking events are a lot of fun because I get to see how excited certain people are about their projects, and it's just like we help make this happen and it's super exciting.
So my name is Emily and I am on the Youth Edmonton Grants Committee that is part of the Edmonton Community Foundation, and what we do as a committee is we review all of the applications that we receive through each cycle, and we basically score them and we say, okay, you know, this project looks really cool, you know, I think we should give them a chance to make their project like go forwards, and then we have the ability to kind of discuss that as a team and come to a unanimous conclusion. This is a new event, but this is a really cool event because then it allows us to put like faces to the names, so we actually get to meet the applicants and see what their project's about and hear it from their perspective as opposed to just reading it on a page. It's a little bit more personal this way, and it's really cool to see all the youth engagement and all the youth activity in the community.
I asked Emily what a successful application would look like.
A successful application has to show passion. It has to be completely youth-led, and it has to have basically a clear plan of action. It has to have set dates. They have to have thought about where they want to allocate their funds. They have to show that they've already put effort in by contacting any people that they need to get in contact with and show that they've already put like some serious thought and effort into the application.
There were a lot of people there to celebrate their projects. It was fantastic to see. Unfortunately, we weren't able to include all of the great initiatives that were funded in this round, but here are a few highlights.
Yeah, so my name is Abigail Chung. I am the producer and creator of For Kids by Kids, and every year we have this benefit concert at Festival Place where a bunch of local performers, actors, dancers, singers come to our event to perform, and it all goes towards the Stollery. I always look forward to bringing the community together because all the numbers and all the acts that perform at the show come from different studios, different acting companies, different individual artists. So to have them all in under one roof performing for the same cause is like, I just love that feeling.
Hi, I'm Henry.
My name is Noah.
My name is Ryan.
Our project is a news app for a high school. What we're doing is we're working with the school to build an easy-to-access news service for all of the students in the school. So if the school has like an important date or like there's a test exam or et cetera, that school wants to put out, a lot of the trouble comes from students not being able to access it that easily. They'll put posters up, it'll be on the announcements. No one listens to the announcements. I don't listen to the announcements. But the news app will be a really easy way for people to just tap on an app and see everything.
It also has like push notifications so that they get like a little notification on their phone and it buzzes so that they will get reminded once it comes up.
And a really awesome thing about our project is that something we don't get from computer science class is the opportunity to work in a professional environment. But something we want to focus on this club is what it takes to work on a huge project for 6 months with the same people, produce results, and actually get stuff done as a group, as if you do in an actual workplace, right?
My name is Megan Avalpathas. It's a diversity and engineering project. So right now in engineering, there's a big discrepancy between how, I guess, male students and gender minorities are treated. We see it in the workplace, we see it in academic culture, we see it in student culture. But right now, what we're trying to do is, I guess, get some quantitative figures to support the qualitative data we have. So all the feelings and emotions and all the statements we have from students, we're just trying to gauge how students feel through numbers. So we're creating a survey to give to all the undergraduate students to see where we're at as far as diversity and inclusivity goes in the Faculty of Engineering, and hopefully it'll branch over to other STEM fields. And then from there, we're hoping to, I guess, give some recommendations to the faculty when it comes to maybe some lectures or workshops or policy or curriculum recommendations that'll help bridge those gaps in our education.
Hi, my name is Stuart McDougall. The name of my project is called Nest. And it's going to be a live performance done through Next Fest, which is an emerging artist festival that Theater Network puts on every year. This project is about queer community and queer kind of unity and togetherness and the celebration of all of that. And I think the biggest thing that I'm excited about is that I'll be working with so many different queer artists as part of our main ensemble of five, but also for every show we're going to be bringing in a different artist or group of artists who identify as queer, and they're going to have a designated spot in our show to kind of join us and do their thing as part of that and as further celebration of queer community.
We were just listening to some of the projects that Lisa recorded at the Young Edmonton Grants Gathering. All of the projects you heard are being organized and led by youth. Some really creative initiatives have been developed. So if you know someone who might be eligible for a YAG grant, be sure to check out ecfoundation.org for application deadlines. The next deadline, by the way, is May 15th.
We're nearing the end of our show, which means
news time.
Yep, and we have a lot to share and a lot of grant deadlines coming up, which means there's money out there for a lot of people. So pay attention, folks. We're going to give you a really brief overview, and you can go dig up the details on your own at ecfoundation.org. So where should we start?
Well, first, I want to remind people to check out our summer issue of Legacy in Action. You can find it inside Avenue Magazine, and it's available on June 1st.
And we are happy to announce Wine Wednesdays. This is a great opportunity to learn about Edmonton Community Foundation and meet our donor services team. So if you're interested and want to learn more about what we do and what you can do for your community, you can contact the donor services team at donorservices@ecfoundation.org.
And now for the application deadlines. We'd like to share these and give you a heads up about funding that may be available to you or to someone you know. There are lots of deadlines to share, so here we go.
The deadline for our awards for students experience financial need are May 15th, and these awards range from $2,000 to $5,000.
Also on May 15th, awards for young musicians. The amount and number of these awards will vary.
May 31st is the deadline for the Nancy Fairley Scholarships. This is a $3,000 award for IB English students.
And charitable organizations can apply for up to $40,000 for our community grant program. Application deadline is June 1st. This is for projects starting after September 1st.
Applications for our community scholarships are June 15th, and these awards range from $1,000 to $4,000.
And finally, we're very excited to announce a third intake of Vital Sign grant applications. Priority will be given to programs that focus on improving economic outcome for newcomers to Canada in Edmonton. Edmonton and area charities can apply for up to $40,000 a year for 3 years. The application deadline is June 28th.
That's a lot of information, so be sure to visit thewellendowedpodcast.com for all the details.
Well, we're nearing the end here, so I'd like to thank all of our guests for sharing their time with us, and thanks to all of you for tuning in to the Well Endowed Podcast. We hope you enjoy it, and if you did, please be sure to share it, subscribe, and do all those things that help us grow. We've been your hosts, Elizabeth Bonkink.
And Andrew Paul. Until next time.
The Well Endowed Podcast is produced by Edmonton Community Foundation.
And edited by Lisa Pruden.
You can visit our website at wellendowedpodcast.com.
Subscribe to us on iTunes.
And follow us on Twitter at TheECF.
Our theme music was created by Octavo Productions.
Check them out at octavoproductions.com.
And as always, don't forget to visit Edmonton Community Foundation at ecfoundation.org. Well endowed.